My name is Michael McCusker. As every sentient being most likely is aware of, all things move all the time. Galaxies, planets, seasons, months, lives. Human art and photography attempt to freeze moments into a freeze of no time. But time, however, cannot be restrained. No less death, which occurs individually, but its remains are consumed collectively, microscopically, and transposed into whatever essentially serves Mother Gaia, micro and macroscopically. Even Donald Trump and his intemperate legacy of 50-star fascism will be ground underfoot. He and his legacy might simply be a stain on humanity's history, soon wiped away by nothing less or more than cosmic comedy. Think of him as a reincarnation of human despotism that always plagues our species, a Hitler, a Torquemada, even perhaps as a Jefferson Davis, Civil War president of a slavery enigma that perpetuated America's first Civil War. I'm going to read something now that was printed in my old, now defunct newspaper, the North Coast Times Eagle, by Robin Sawyer. Here Comes Your Ghost Again, by Robin Sawyer. And that's a quote from Diamonds and Rust by Joan Baez. Years ago, I was moving an old couch for a dear friend who was many years my senior. The couch had been stored on a porch for several years and had been exposed to quite a bit of moisture. As I lifted an end of the couch, I noticed a paper bag between the cushions. I picked the bag up and began to throw it aside when my curiosity kicked in. I opened the sack and was very surprised to find the likeness of Adolf Hitler staring me in the face. I showed the stamp collection in the bag to my friend, who said, "Take it and see if you can get a couple of bucks for it." There was something strange about the tone of her voice, and I didn't question her about the stamps. It was obvious, however, that someone had collected the stamps in Nazi Germany, and they had somehow ended up on Jean's back porch. She would have been about 25 when World War II ended. Nearly all of the stamps were badly water damaged, but the story they told was fascinating. There were stamps commemorating Hitler's 55th birthday, and stamps meant to immortalize the assassinated second in command of the SS. Hitler and Mussolini stood looking out over a town like shepherds of men, benevolent leaders. The symbol of the SS was glorified on another stamp. Images of Hitler and swastikas were glorified throughout the collection. As I looked through them, the strange tone I noted in Jean's voice didn't seem so odd. The troubled economy in pre-Nazi Germany was partially responsible for one of the darkest times in history. The German people were looking for something to blame their troubles on, and a group of people who did not believe that Christ was the Son of God made an excellent repository for the flood of anger filling the country. Today, we wonder how a nation could allow the manifestation of hell on earth. A nation of Christians, among others, we wonder how another could allow entire families to be starved, beaten, tortured, and murdered. 30-odd years I have watched the log trucks roll out of Oregon's hills. The trucks have steadily become fewer, and the trees they haul have become progressively smaller. Oregon's troubled timber industry is one part of the weakening American economy. People are, rightfully, afraid that our days of prosperity are drawing to a close. The political and economic leaders who have failed us are looking for someone to blame. Unfortunately, for our failed leaders, Americans don't collectively condemn Jews these days. Instead, a new immorality must be found, a group of people different from most of us, or another species that stands in the way of progress. The politicians are looking for scapegoats to blame their failures on. 50 years from now, will we be remembered as the people who were duped into blaming owls and homosexuals for things they had no control over? I look at myself with the rest of you and wonder, can we really be such fools? All my life, I have tried to understand the differences between people. After all, it's a lack of cooperation that is responsible for most of our problems. No matter how I try, I can never understand people like David Duke. How can people be so consumed with hatred and call themselves Christians? Even atheists can see the hypocrisy that so many self-proclaimed Christians are blind to. Darwin would find himself more welcome in heaven than the self-righteous hypocrites passing judgment around this country. Although I disagree with most of the right-wing's philosophy, I believe it has chosen the right political party to affiliate itself with. Donald Trump et al. Seems to be part of the natural evolution of the Republican Party. Having no power, money, or influence, I often wonder why I bother worrying about guys like Duke, Lon Mabon, Donald Trump, and the rest of the people Gandhi said would eventually fall. Then I think of the alternative to opposing the oppression of free people. I think of the real story behind those stamps, and suddenly I am very afraid, but very motivated. Those of us who have known Anne Frank and forgotten her have lost our souls with her memory. And that was by Robin Sawyer, who lived in Seattle when he wrote it. And he was at the time a frequent contributor to the North Coast Times Eagle, which I was publisher for nearly 3 decades. And now, something I wrote, trees are us. And a quote by Jack Oman, Forrest Gump, a forest is like a box of chocolates. You eat it all up. Less than 10% of old growth trees remain in the Pacific Northwest, which includes Northern California as well as Oregon and Washington in the USA and British Columbia in Canada. Although the forests in BC are intensely logged, they are not within United States jurisdiction, even though an integral part of the regional ecosystem. The economy of the Northwest is largely based on timber products and has been assailed with court injunctions against clear-cutting public forests, despite a badly compromised and unpopular forest plan put into effect during the Clinton administration. The problems and complexity pertaining to forest use, focus on employment, endangered species, shrinking habitat, land erosion and water pollution, disastrous fires that consume hundreds of thousands of acres each season and kill animals and firefighters, climate change, methods and extent of logging, especially clear-cutting of old-growth forests, access and use of public forest lands. We read and hear about the massive destruction of the rainforests of Asia and South America, yet somehow find it difficult to equate with our own clear-cutting of forests in this country. The great North American forest has virtually vanished in little more than two centuries, from the East Coast to the Pacific Ocean, from the great conifer forests of the North to the hardwoods of the South, in particular, a huge swath across the top of the nation, from Maine to Oregon. Little is left of Oregon's old forests, and the forests of Northern California and Washington, and what little remains is incessantly under threat. The never-quenched hunger of the timber industry has butchered its own lands, replacing them, when they do, with inferior and less profitable monocultural tree farms. Incredibly, the timber companies demand as their divine right the public forests. And as they log off more and more public timber, they demand more of what is left. The city of Astoria is a microcosm of the situation. Trees versus money. The likely long-range loss of a local ecosystem in exchange for short-term profit. Astoria is unusual in that it has a large city forest, which most cities lack and many wish to have. This small remnant of a much larger forest on the hills above the Columbia River is vital to the quality of life many wish for themselves and their successors. Others do not share sympathy with that vision. Trees are economical units to them, to be harvested to meet market demands without consideration for aesthetic or ecological value. The Pacific Northwest is in the same shape as Astoria. Its resources have been ravaged, and the greed for what remains will not end until all of it is gone. Trees, fish, and everything else despoiled for single generation profit, one generation displacing another in its desire to exploit whatever left that is yet available for sale. Yet the glory days of logging are at an end, which leaves a simple, dramatic choice. To either allow loggers to keep their jobs until they have cut down the remaining old-growth forests, or save what is left at the cost of jobs they will lose anyway when the last trees are down. Automation and export of raw trees have accounted for the loss of most timber jobs, contrary to claims by the timber industry. Timber companies and environmentalists push at each other with little inclination to compromise their positions. Stubborn environmentalists make good ancestors. Loggers do not. They have denuded the forests and showed little inclination to replace what was lost on their own lands, instead demanding a mandate of public forests for their chainsaws. And here is a paradox, not among managers who see trees as only ciphers on ledgers, but in the attitude of proud, roughneck loggers who consider themselves woodsmen and profess love for the forests they destroy and refuse to quit cutting until nothing is left. When the last of the big trees are gone and the poor grade second and third growth timber reduces profits, the managers will diversify their portfolios and dismiss the woodsmen who created their wealth. Let them be dishwashers. Without the forests of Asia and the Americas, we bequeath our descendants an arid world, a hot greenhouse, no shade to shield us from the sun's ultraviolet rays. We have virtually ruined the upper atmosphere ozone. Water systems dry up without the cooler, moist climates of forests. Biological diversity disappears. Marine life vanishes. Maybe only hallucinogenic drugs will recall the ancient symbiosis with Earth before our species moved out alone to dominate our home planet through obliteration of all that makes it home. And that was something I wrote for my now defunct newspaper, the North Coast Times Eagle. And yet I believe it is still right on the relevancy ticket. Happy Thanksgiving. Perhaps its commemoration might goad our collective civility as a denouncement of Emperor wannabe Donald Trump, coward and traitor of human liberty and brotherly sisterhood, a legacy of totalitarian asininity soon begone into the hellish nightmare of his own asininity. This is Michael McCusker. Jack Harris is today's engineer of this program. If there has been a time in U.S. history to truly test the efficacy of presidential impeachment to preserve life, liberty, and the American way, now is the moment. Trump should finally be Trump. And now, in finish of this program, I would like to read a poem by the late John Paul Barrett, whom many of you might remember. Storm. Like passing through a decade, breeze of change, turning, ocean currents undulating back upon themselves, slow wave to and from, and taste the water, salty warm, combining with my blood, drifting, floating, ever buoyant in my mind. I cross the blood sea vastness, a storm, but in the right direction. Shaking, four dimensions, bowl ride coaster, unships and sweeps away my mast and rudder, guides my vessel, foundering, yet moves us, sweeping swiftly toward the destination. And that was by the late John Paul Barrett.
You've been listening to A Story Told on KMUN, featuring Michael McCusker, journalist, activist, former firefighter, and Vietnam veteran. Michael has been sharing essays and poetry on A Story Told since 1987. For 30 years, he published the North Coast Times Eagle newspaper out of his home in Astoria, Oregon. Michael currently shares his work and the works of other authors from his home on the Central Oregon coast. Join us here next week for A Story Told.